Thanks for joining us. I'm Rory McCann. I am a conference producer and the marketing manager with Life Science Nation. I am joined today by Russell McAllister. He is the founder of Bold Therapeutics. Russell, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Rory.
Well, it's great to have you. Bold Therapeutics was a recent winner at the recent Digital Resi March Innovators Pitch Challenge. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Now, for anyone who wasn't at the conference, didn't get to see your video, read about Bold Therapeutics, why don't you introduce yourself and share a little bit about your career and how you started the company and who Bold Therapeutics is?
Sure. Thanks, Rory. So my background is as a sell-side biopharma analyst and later strategy banker. I spent most of my career in San Francisco and then New York, and my last Wall Street job was running the strategic advisory group for one of the life science banks based in New York. So in that capacity, I helped other emerging biopharma companies acquire and dispose of assets via licensing, as well as optimally position their companies for raising capital, and then actually helping them raise capital. So not surprisingly, that experience helps a lot when I transitioned to industry about a decade ago. And I have worked both as CFO for a number of biopharma companies and more recently as CEO.
What was that transition like and how has it positively impacted your journey with Bold Therapeutics?
Sure. It's a good question, Rory. I think my time as an analyst was really helpful because you observe failure. So failure is a pretty good teacher. And I would say after spending a few years as an analyst, you have a really good idea of what not to do. And that informs you about what to do that actually works. So companies tend to make the same sorts of mistakes. And if you can avoid the most common pitfalls, you have a significant advantage out of the gates. As a banker, got a lot of experience doing licensing. So that's definitely helped at Bold as well as the other companies where I worked and understanding how to negotiate those deals, looking at it from both sides of the table, and then certainly raising capital.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Why don't you share a little bit about Bold? What are you targeting? What are some indications you're working with? Share a little bit about the genesis of the company up to where you guys are at now.
Sure. Maybe I'll rewind a little bit. So as an analyst, I focused particularly on turnarounds and failures of lead assets where things in the pipeline were promising. So that really set the stage for what Bold Therapeutics is. I founded Bold Therapeutics in mid-2018, specifically to develop the asset that's Bold 100, which I thought was particularly compelling, really one of the most compelling assets I've seen in my career. It took some work for a year and a half to get manufacturing sorted and the patent portfolio cleaned up and reset. But since then, we've advanced quite rapidly. We're an oncology company, and Bold 100 is for advanced solid tumors and liquid tumors.
Such a great need. Tell us a little bit about just your fundraising. What stage are you at now? What are you raising? How has your outreach been going, and what strategies have you been using?
So at the genesis of the company, we acquired the technology, the asset Bold 100 for $10 million in convertible debt. And we set that up to automatically convert to equity once we had raised $2 million from investors. So that happened pretty quickly. To date, we've raised about $6 million in hard capital and another $3 million, maybe a little bit more than that, from government funding and subsidies. So we've really leveraged the capital that we've taken in. We're currently on our second round of funding. It's a $5 million Series A1 at a pre-money valuation of $40 million. And we've got $3 million of that five already committed at this point. So I'm looking for at least another two. I'd take up to 12. And the extra money would let me start two additional parallel phase two studies in the near term. If I don't raise that extra money, I'll do that after raising a much larger capital round following the phase two data in late 2022. But based on the data we have, it would be potentially beneficial to start those trials sooner rather than later.
Of course. And congratulations on already getting the $3 million. That's great. That's a really, really solid start.
Definitely. Despite having a lot of experience, capital raising is always hard. So it's never easy. I think the key is to put yourself in the shoes of the investors. Most entrepreneurs don't understand how much deal flow the investors see. It's a lot. And so you have to be able to cut through that noise effectively. You want the process to be as easy and straightforward for them as it can possibly be. The first meeting or two, that's really about piquing interest. So you want to keep those presentations kind of high and tight. And then the subsequent meetings are really due diligence. I'd sum up due diligence as looking for a reason to pass. And so you want everything 100% buttoned up before anyone starts due diligence. So you should have your data room up. You should have been through it a lot, perhaps get some other people to see what their impression is. And really, if you can get through the due diligence process without a reason to pass emerging, then you have a really good chance at success.
One thing that you said that I thought is so simple, but if we can apply it more broadly, it would help so many founders, is think like an investor and how to make their lives easier, because just thinking about that can often pull founders out of what they think is the most exciting, most interesting part of their company, and really think about what might this investor want to know that they would want to ask me? Okay, how do I incorporate that into my pitch, my deck? Just get that information out, at least in the first meeting. So like you said, that first meeting, they know already whether or not they're willing to take that next due diligence step with you. And you don't need to have another conversation about, is this actually a good fit? Because that's not a great use of anybody's time.
I agree completely. I think it's important to be selective about whom you meet with. You can be excited about getting an investor meeting, but if you do some research and it's not a good fit, you're going to want to pass because you're going to waste your time and you're going to waste their time.
Do you have any secrets to how you can determine upfront whether or not it could be a good partnership before you reach out to them?
I'm not sure if it's a secret. I would say researching the investors, and there's lots of different ways to do that, but you know, just Googling and looking at transactions they've invested in, a lot of which are publicly announced, is a really good place to start. If a fund only invests in medical devices and you're a biopharma company, that's probably not going to work. If they have only invested in late stage products and you're an early stage company, probably not going to work. They will appreciate you doing the homework, and it will be much more productive from a meeting standpoint if you invest that time early in the process.
Absolutely. And you're totally right. Google's not a secret, but in life science and healthcare, especially with early stage investing, it's such a small world. It's easier now than ever to get a sense of who's a good fit just beyond the product, the stage of development. Investors are so open now about what kind of teams they want to invest in, what kind of founders they get excited about. It sounds oversimplified, but just a quick Google search, you'd be surprised at what you can learn. Tell me a little bit about your experience with Resy. What was that process like preparing to pitch at Resy? How were the questions? How was the follow-up? Are you conducting any follow-up?
I've been in biopharma about 20 years now. I've probably been to 150 investor conferences in that time. Lots of good conferences, lots of bad conferences. It was my first time ever at a Resy conference. Definitely exceeded expectations in terms of both meeting quality and quantity. Try to calibrate expectations going into these things. It really is just a handful of high quality meetings justifies going to a conference like that. And we were kind of way over the mark in terms of good quality meetings. We ended up at around 20 meetings. I can't think of a single bad meeting in those 20, so that's great. Some of them were genuinely enjoyable. We had maybe three no-shows, which is not unusual at all. And that's fine because we'll schedule something offline. So good meetings. And then in terms of follow-up, very quick to get back a copy of the deck that we presented, as well as any supporting literature tied to the conversations that we had. So different people are looking for different things. Some people ask much more scientific depth questions. Other people wanted to know more about financing strategy, et cetera. So sent them non-confidential materials related to what they ask about. And then very quickly went to CDAs with a number of different companies. And so they're heading into our due diligence room.
That's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. I thought it was funny. You said that you had a lot of good meetings and also almost surprised, and they were enjoyable. Like that, it's so funny that that's, you know, often more than what we could ask, but a great sign. If you are potentially going into due diligence with a potential partner, that's a long process. That's a long in-depth process. And if you are already enjoying your time connecting with them, working with them, talking about what you do, that's a great sign. And then obviously if it becomes a more long-term partnership, you definitely want to make sure that you enjoy that person's time, you respect their time, and it's valuable to you, to the company. And I'm really glad to hear that Resy was a source for some of those conversations for you. And I really hope they go interesting and exciting places. What's the big picture goal for Bolt Therapeutics? Where do you want to bring the company?
Our focus is on efficiently generating clinical data to entice someone to license Bolt 100 and then run with the ball from there. And once we do that, or in parallel with doing that, we'd like to pull in another asset and do the same thing again, go back to our core competency in running early stage clinical trials in oncology, and then license that out. And each time, maybe that's 3 years, something like that. And we have the in-house capability to run maybe three small phase two studies in parallel. And that's really about our limit. As both an analyst and later as a banker, I think the biggest consistent mistake that I saw companies and leadership teams getting out in front of their skis, thinking that they were good at things that they really were not good at, didn't have the experience or capital to do well. And it's a very competitive industry. So you have to be mindful of sort of what you're capable of and not overreach.
Nobody gets into entrepreneurship who doesn't have big, exciting ideas, but it's marrying that big, exciting idea with the actual process to get there. And it sounds like you and the team at Bolt Therapeutics have really well matched those two with your experience and also the quality of your assets and your roadmap. That's incredibly impressive and I think very valuable for other founders to hear. Russell, thank you so much for sharing the Bolt Therapeutics story. It is just getting started in some ways. And so we hope to keep in touch and keep hearing about where you guys are going. And we appreciate you being part of the Resy community and sharing your story with us.
Great. Thank you, Rory. I'll notch this as another enjoyable conversation.